Sex is complicated. Even with someone you love deeply, talking about intimacy can feel impossible. This struggle led sex therapist Vanessa Mary to therapy with her boyfriend Xander when their once passionate relationship cooled. They'd gone from marathon makeout sessions to awkwardly avoiding intimacy, a pattern most long-term couples experience but rarely discuss. Sex talks has become a cultural phenomenon, with celebrities like Kristen Bell praising its transformative approach. The book has sparked conversations on social media platforms where discussing intimacy was once taboo, with thousands sharing how these techniques saved their relationships. What makes this guide revolutionary isn't just its frank discussion of sexuality, but its practical framework for having conversations most of us have been avoiding our entire lives. The fucking fairy tale, that Hollywood version where sex unfolds spontaneously and effortlessly, is just that, a fairy tale. When Francesca and Jake sought my help as a sex therapist, their seemingly perfect relationship was crumbling beneath the surface. Despite their loving foundation, she faked orgasms, he struggled with erections, and their frequency had plummeted. Real-life sex requires work, unlike the effortless chemistry we see on screen. When the initial spark fades, we often feel confused and resentful that maintaining desire takes effort. This happens for biological reasons. Your brain chemistry literally changes after the honeymoon phase. In early relationships, your brain mimics OCD and cocaine highs with surging serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine. This intense chemistry naturally shifts after 1 to 3 years to oxytocin and vasopressin, which promote bonding rather than lust. Stress compounds these challenges. When stressed, your body releases cortisol, shutting down unnecessary functions like libido to focus on survival. Just as a caveman fleeing a predator doesn't need an erection, your constantly stressed body ensures your sex drive never fully recovers. Life transitions further complicate things. Children dramatically change relationship dynamics. Partners are no longer each other's primary focus, responsibilities multiply, and kids become the greatest cockblocks of all time. Parents struggle to separate their parental identity from their sexual selves, with 67% reporting plummeted marital satisfaction after having children. Then there's rejection. Early relationships thrive on mutual enthusiasm. When no enters your vocabulary around sex, it triggers shame and embarrassment so uncomfortable that most people stop initiating altogether to avoid rejection. Sexual perfectionism creates impossible standards for our intimate lives. My clients describe expectations like getting turned on spontaneously, having a hot body in every position, and satisfying my partner perfectly. These shoulds create pressure that kills enjoyment. This perfectionism leads to anxiety-inducing sex that damages your drive and leaves you stuck in unsatisfying routines. The truth is, real-world sex involves awkwardness and messiness, farts, queefs, bumped heads, and that's perfectly normal. If sex were perfect every time, there wouldn't be exceptional moments to appreciate. By dismantling unrealistic expectations, we can build a healthier approach where sex can be passionate and satisfying without matching the fairy tale. Before having meaningful conversations with partners, we need sexual self-awareness about what turns us on and what we need to enjoy ourselves. Aaliyah, who practices ethical non-monogamy, was confused by her dramatically different sexual experiences between partners. Sex with her new partner, Bryce, felt entirely different from sex with her boyfriend, Sebastian. She enjoyed oral sex more with Bryce and felt intensely attracted to him. This left her questioning her chemistry with Sebastian and even her own identity. To understand your sexuality better, first recognize there are two fundamentally different sex drive types. Sex drive involves both mental desire, sex sounds good, and physical arousal, bodily responses. These happen separately. Spontaneous types feel mental desire first, then physical arousal second. They think about sex randomly throughout the day and often initiate. Responsive types experience physical arousal first, then mental desire. They rarely think about sex until they're already engaged in physical intimacy and often don't realize they want sex until they're having it. Neither type is better, just different. Men tend toward spontaneous desire, women toward responsive. Before increasing desire, we must first get our libidos out of reverse. To identify your reverse factors, recall recent times you weren't in the mood and analyze what specifically dampened desire. Tiredness, fullness after eating, body insecurities, fear of pain, poor initiation style, relationship tensions, performance anxiety, or lack of privacy. By identifying your three most common reverse factors, you can work with your partner to prevent them. Sexual pain is a significant libido killer that affects 30% of women. If painful sex is dampening your libido, try using lube every time, allowing at least 15 minutes to warm up before penetration, moving slowly, experimenting with positions, getting regular checkups, seeing a pelvic floor specialist if needed, and never forcing yourself to endure painful sex. To identify what puts you into drive, reflect on times you felt in the mood. Consider dynamics like having energy, feeling confident, enjoying how your partner initiated, feeling connected, having privacy, or spending time on foreplay. Anticipation is particularly powerful. When you anticipate pleasure, your brain releases more dopamine than when actually experiencing it, increasing both your mood and motivation. Most people freeze when asked what they want during sex. To uncover what brings you pleasure, pay attention during intimate moments using the PLEASE acronym: position, comfort and angles, length, pace, environment, surroundings, activity, what you're doing, stimulation, where and how you're being touched, and energy, mood between partners. Remember that pleasure doesn't need to be elaborate. Simple things like soft kisses, back scratches, and verbal affirmation can be deeply satisfying. Your sexual history contains valuable clues about your preferences. Examine early memories and fantasies about sex, masturbation experiences, favorite sexual memories with partners, and even unsatisfying experiences. All these can reveal what you truly enjoy and what you'd rather avoid. Masturbation is the best way to learn what you like. You can literally write your user manual with your own hand. Safety forms the foundation of a healthy sex life, yet it's rarely discussed. To have great sex, you must know and enforce your boundaries while having partners who respect them. You can't genuinely consent unless you feel comfortable saying no. Many people, like Sunil, a 36-year-old Indian-American man exploring his sexuality, only vaguely understand their boundaries or feel ashamed about saying no to activities their partners want. Boundaries are what we need to feel comfortable and safe in relationships. Sexual boundaries are requirements from yourself, your partner, and your sex life to feel secure and satisfied. They fall into three categories: things that don't sound pleasurable, things that don't feel safe, and things that contradict your values. Boundaries constantly shift and evolve. Sometimes you don't recognize a limit until after crossing it. Creating a personal set of sexual guidelines means categorizing your boundaries into red lights, hard no's, yellow lights, maybes, and green lights, enthusiastic yeses. This approach isn't just about limitations. It celebrates what you're excited about while honoring the nuanced maybes that depend on context, mood, or the specific person. Even small boundaries matter, like a client who didn't want to be called mommy during sex. While you can say no to any sexual activity for any reason, it's worth examining whether some boundaries stem from shame rather than safety or values. Like Sunil, who deemed anal play too gay due to cultural conditioning, or someone avoiding oral sex because they've internalized body shame. Questioning your red lights with compassion helps strengthen genuine boundaries while potentially releasing those based on external judgment. Sexual abuse affects nearly 1 in 5 women and 1 in 14 men, with even higher rates among transgender and non-binary people. Common trauma responses include avoidance of intimacy as a protective mechanism, complicated sexual history post-assault, self-blame, physical arousal during assault, non-concordance, dissociation during sex, and hypervigilance around touch. These reactions aren't character flaws, they're natural responses to trauma. The Take This Back technique helps dismantle sexual blockages by listing negative beliefs using "there's a part of me that believes." This creates distance between you and limiting thoughts. The exercise continues by identifying where these beliefs originated, from parents, religion, culture, or friends, helping you recognize these are external impositions, not innate truths. You then visualize returning this baggage to its source, saying, "I don't want this anymore. It's not mine, and it's not serving me." After addressing blockages, create a list of positive goals for your sex life, like initiating sex with confidence, learning to orgasm, or bringing your authentic self into the bedroom. By clarifying your boundaries, beliefs, and goals, you take control of your sexuality and can decide how you think about sex, what you do, and who you share yourself with. Before diving into sex talks, establish ground rules for effective communication. The 9 golden rules transform how you discuss intimacy. 1. Name your intentions. Remind yourself of your positive intentions before conversations about sex. Instead of rehearsing worst-case scenarios, tell yourself, "I'm initiating this conversation because I love my partner and I know we're capable of a smoking hot sex life." 2. See yourselves as a team. View you and your partner as teammates working together against whatever blocks your ideal sex life. No single person is the problem. You're two individuals with histories and evolving needs trying to fit your puzzle pieces together. 3. Start softly. Research shows how you begin a conversation predicts how it will end. Don't talk when either of you is halt, hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. Begin by acknowledging shared challenges and keep your tone calm and kind. 4. Use I language. Instead of saying you never want sex, say, "I've been feeling lonely lately and I've been wanting to feel more connected to you." The formula, "I feel X and I need Y," helps prevent defensiveness. 5. Go slow. Maintain a slow pace and tackle issues one at a time. Most people speed up when nervous, which leads to misinterpreting your partner's words and poor listening. Try having conversations at half your usual speed. 6. Avoid always and never. These words are rarely accurate and immediately trigger defensiveness. They make your partner feel trapped and incapable of change. 7. Make space for new behaviors. If you want your partner to change, you must create space for that change to happen. When you declare, "he'll never do it," or "she's too shy" in their presence, you sabotage any possibility of getting what you want. 8. Be a good listener. Give your partner your full attention without multitasking, make eye contact, and turn your body toward theirs. Use active listening by summarizing what they've said in your own words. 9. Be compassionate. Remember that everyone carries sexual baggage. When your partner struggles, approach them with empathy, recognizing they're dealing with their own internal wounds about sex. Additional communication hacks include: don't hide your needs in logistical questions, asking, "are you almost done," when you really mean, "I miss you." Don't anticipate what your partner is going to say or plan your response while they're speaking. Truly listen instead. The 5 crucial conversations every couple needs about their sex life are: acknowledgement, sex is a thing and we have it; connection, what do we need to feel close; desire, what do we each need to get turned on; pleasure, what do we each need to feel good; and exploration, what should we try next? Before diving into the acknowledgement conversation, start by giving your partner daily compliments about their appearance or attractiveness. These should be light, playful, and flirty, from commenting on physical attributes to expressing continued attraction. This simple practice helps reestablish appreciation and opens the conversational door. When approaching your partner about sex for the first time, choose a moment when they're in a good mood and outside the bedroom. 2 effective conversation starters are the African safari method, sharing a favorite sexual memory, or the hot potato method, asking your partner about their favorite memory with you. This reminiscing creates a hopeful atmosphere by reminding you both of your passionate potential. If discussing your personal sex life feels too intimidating, start by following sex educators on social media and discussing their daily topics about sex, from apologies to fantasies to scheduling. This approach makes it easier to discuss sex in general terms before addressing your own experiences. Discussing sex immediately after having it offers unique benefits. The experience is fresh in mind, you have specific moments to reference, you're feeling connected, and there's no performance pressure. Start with compliments about what you enjoyed, then progress to requesting repeats of favorite moments, and eventually suggest new things to try. The acknowledgement conversation eventually transforms into flirting, helping couples recapture the playful banter of their early relationship. Once you're comfortable acknowledging your sex life, you can incorporate sexual innuendo, compliments, references to positive experiences, suggestive comments, public praise of your partner, sweet notes or texts, and playful gestures into your daily interactions. Dry spells are normal. 93% of our Instagram followers reported experiencing them and shouldn't make you feel ashamed. Rather than avoiding the topic, acknowledge the awkwardness directly. I know our sex life isn't where either one of us wants it to be. I want to have the conversation because I love you. For couples who never had great sex, even small positive moments can be acknowledged. If a partner gets suspicious about suddenly discussing sex, be honest about wanting to normalize the conversation. A fundamental relationship dynamic exists in most couples. One partner needs emotional connection before physical intimacy, while the other needs physical intimacy to feel emotionally connected. This mismatch causes significant tension in 75% of relationships, according to polls. In heterosexual relationships, women typically, 86%, need emotional connection first, while men, 77%, prioritize physical connection. Despite being a sex-first type myself, emotional connection should precede physical intimacy in established relationships. Disconnected sex feels icky and can even be re-traumatizing for abuse survivors. Attempting to rebuild connection through sex without emotional intimacy can leave partners feeling gross and used and actually create more disconnection. Logs are specific actions that help partners feel connected and keep their relationship fire burning. Connection needs evolve over time, sometimes causing confusion when previously effective connection attempts suddenly feel off. Identify your specific connection needs rather than assuming partners give and receive love the same way. Daily check-ins asking, "What do you need to feel connected to me today?" can transform your relationship. The bristle reaction is an involuntary physical recoil that occurs when your partner touches you. This creates a vicious cycle where one partner bristles at even non-sexual touch, causing the other to touch them less except to initiate sex, which reinforces the belief that all touch has ulterior motives. Creating structured touch time, at least 5 minutes daily dedicated solely to non-sexual touch, can help overcome this pattern. The purpose isn't to get turned on or have sex afterward, but to enjoy touch for its own sake. Two scientifically proven forms of physical touch that create deeper connection are the 30-second hug and the 6-second kiss, which release oxytocin, promoting feelings of relaxation, trust, and connection. Being touched out means reaching your physical contact limit, where any additional touch feels intolerable. This commonly affects primary caregivers who've been in physical contact with children all day. You can't be both touched out and turned on simultaneously. Solutions include prioritizing daily alone time, engaging in bodily activities during breaks, practicing sensory deprivation through breathing, enlisting partner support, and communicating openly about the experience. The mental load is the invisible mental burden of tracking household needs beyond just chores. It includes planning, organizing, and reshuffling family responsibilities, which disproportionately falls on women. This imbalance affects intimacy, with research showing couples who share housework more evenly enjoy more frequent and satisfying sex. Desire requires attention and communication. It's both personal and relational, something experienced individually but significantly influenced by partner dynamics. Share your personal sex drive insights with your partner by saying, "Our relationship and sex life are important to me. I did research about my sex drive and what keeps my engine revving. Here's what I'll do about it and how you can support me." Sex is a team sport where both partners share responsibility for desire. The sex drive simmer concept means foreplay begins the moment sex ends, and maintaining sexual energy throughout daily life creates potential for desire. Small gestures, love notes, and physical touch keep desire simmering rather than trying to start from ice-cold water. When addressing turnoffs with your partner, focus on emotional connection first. When your connection tank is full, minor annoyances are less bothersome. Frame conversations positively by highlighting what turns you on rather than criticizing. There's a crucial link between sexual enjoyment and desire. many people judge themselves for having low libido without recognizing that they don't crave sex because the sex they're having isn't pleasurable. By focusing on having higher quality sex, you can increase both desire and pleasure simultaneously. Rejection is part of the price of admission for a healthy sex life, since someone must always initiate. Even in long-term relationships, initiation feels vulnerable. People manage rejection fears either by rarely initiating or by using joke-like techniques, such as the dreaded boob honk. These half-hearted attempts protect the initiator from feeling fully rejected, but fail to create genuine excitement. Understanding initiation styles helps partners communicate better. The six styles include excite me, preferring anticipation and slow burn, take care of me, feeling turned on when a partner acts as caretaker, play with me, responding to playfulness and humor, desire me, wanting to feel intensely desired, connect with me, requiring emotional intimacy first, and touch me, preferring physical touch over verbal initiation. Creating sex menus together helps couples communicate specific desires, whether it's a quick single-item encounter or a multi-course experience. These menus, with playful names like Taco Tuesday or Michelin Star Tasting Menu, make initiation clearer and more fun. When your partner initiates and you're not immediately interested, resist the knee-jerk rejection. Instead, use the consideration process. Recognize your partner is seeking connection. Ask yourself if you're open to seeing if you might get turned on. Inquire about what's on their sex menu, and give yourself time to consider their invitation without immediate pressure to respond. Despite training as a sex therapist, I had a secret. I couldn't orgasm with partners. Like many women, I'd resorted to faking orgasms for years, finding the prospect of honest communication about my climax difficulties terrifying. When I finally confronted my partner Xander awkwardly, I discovered he thought he was being considerate by not pressuring me about orgasms based on what a previous partner had told him. This miscommunication highlights why discussing pleasure is so difficult yet crucial. Since pleasure is complex, start with something straightforward, understanding how you and your partner like to be touched. Create touch maps by rating different body parts and touch styles from 1 to 5 based on preferences. Similarly, map kissing preferences and the emotional energies that turn you on during intimacy. I've developed 11 sex personality types that reveal how we experience pleasure, grouped into 3 categories: body, mind, and spirit. Understanding these types helps couples navigate differences. For example, a romantic who seeks emotional intimacy during physical connection might need different approaches than a pleasure seeker who enjoys pure physical sensation without complexity. Feedback isn't criticism, it's simply reporting your experience. Even in long-term relationships, partners can't read minds, especially regarding something as personal as pleasure. Without communication, we're left guessing. The most effective feedback focuses on what feels good rather than what doesn't. Instead of saying, "That doesn't feel good," try, "When you touch me here, it feels amazing." This positive approach works for several reasons. It provides genuinely useful information, makes your partner feel proud and motivated to continue, and sounds sexy rather than critical. You can even use this approach strategically by giving preemptive compliments. "You look so hot when you're going down on me," or "I love how good you make me feel when you go slow." When tough feedback is necessary, use a framework that accomplishes several things at once. State positive intentions, remind your partner you're on the same team, be gentle but clear about what you don't want, and provide an alternative behavior you would enjoy. Asking, "What do you want?" is one of the worst bedroom questions because it's too general. Instead, use the eye exam test. Give specific options to choose from. Do you want me to massage your back or shoulders? Or does it feel better when I use this pressure or this pressure? Research shows a massive pleasure disparity between men and women during heterosexual encounters. To address this, follow 3 key mantras. 1, anyone who wants an orgasm gets an orgasm. 2, remember your ABCs. Always be touching the clit. And 3, everything counts as sex, moving beyond intercourse-focused sex to include more variety, which dramatically increases orgasm potential for women. Even sex therapists like Vanessa and her husband Xander can fall into predictable sexual routines, quick, efficient encounters with minimal foreplay and familiar positions. This pattern creates what Vanessa calls the white toast problem. Sex becomes so predictable, you never actively crave it. Couples also experience the inhibition effect, where sexual adventurousness decreases as relationship intimacy increases. Asking, "What's your fantasy?" often kills conversations about sexual exploration. The word fantasy intimidates people. 70% of Instagram followers claimed they had none, likely because they associate fantasies with elaborate scenarios. Instead, asking, "What's one thing you're curious about trying?" works much better. This phrasing creates space for exploration without the pressure of certainty. The yes-no-maybe test helps identify potential bedroom activities to explore. You categorize activities into yeses, things you enjoy, nos, things you'd never do, and maybes, things you might try under certain circumstances. Both partners independently categorize each activity, then discuss responses without judgment. The only rule is no negative reactions to your partner's interests. When trying new things, start with small changes rather than diving straight into extreme activities. This builds confidence and motivation to keep exploring. Order your to-do list from least to most intimidating and make a specific plan for trying the easiest item first. For complex fantasies, break them into baby steps. For example, if you're interested in visiting a sex club, start by researching venues, listening to podcasts about them, watching related media, reading online forums, talking dirty about the scenario together, and finally visiting just to observe. When trying something new, follow the first pancake rule. Just like the first pancake in a batch is always weird-looking, your first attempt at a new sexual activity will likely be awkward. Lower the stakes by acknowledging it might not be perfect initially. Try something new 3 times before deciding whether you like it, unless it causes pain or you're certain after 1 try that it's not for you. If you have specific desires you want to explore with your partner, try the dream scheme. Tell your partner, "I had such an interesting dream last night about your fantasy. It was surprisingly sexy." This allows you to gauge their reaction without direct vulnerability. Remember that as long as everyone enthusiastically consents and you're not trying to manipulate or hurt anyone, your desires are perfectly normal, valid, and acceptable. Think about sexual preferences like food preferences. They don't mean anything about you as a person, and they can change from day to day. The fucking fairy tale will continue to whisper that true love and hot sex should come naturally, but intimacy requires active protection and ongoing effort. When I suggest scheduling sex to friends, they often groan, thinking it sounds clinical and desperate. But we schedule things that matter to us, from kids' school plays to important meetings. Holding out for spontaneous sex means avoiding responsibility for your intimate life, like waiting for publisher's clearinghouse instead of seeking a better job. Planning for sex doesn't have to feel clinical. Using the word plan instead of schedule can make a difference, or creating a special name like Sunday Funday. The key is establishing an easy win, one physical activity you're always willing to do with love, regardless of mood. This could be cuddling, kissing, or keeping your partner company while they masturbate. The average couple spends only 35 minutes per week having face-to-face conversations. Scheduling quality time together is just as important as scheduling sex. Plan date nights, new activities, walks, or simply alone time together. It doesn't require leaving the house. Treat this time as sacred. There is no magic number for sexual frequency that works for every couple. A survey of 35,000 respondents showed nearly equal distribution among those having sex 2 to 3 times monthly, weekly, or 2 to 3 times weekly, with minimal differences across age groups or parental status. Focus on quality over quantity. Once you're having high-quality sex worth craving, the quantity typically follows naturally. Sexual inertia means the longer you go without sex, the easier it becomes to continue not having it. Don't ignore dry spells out of embarrassment. Acknowledge them directly. Just as inertia works against you during dry spells, it works in your favor once you restart. The more sex you have, the easier it becomes to continue having it. Dan Savage's concept of fuck first means having sex before going out for dinner or parties rather than waiting until you return home, tired, full, or tipsy. This principle can be expanded to prioritizing sex earlier in the day when you have more energy rather than leaving it until bedtime when exhaustion takes over. When Vanessa and Xander began discussing sex openly every day through their content creation, they experienced a spectacular transformation in their already great sex life. Daily conversations about sex, even on days without physical intimacy, created a constant thread of connection. Whether reading this book together, asking daily sex-related questions, or consuming sex-positive content, making sex a regular topic of conversation keeps it top of mind and strengthens desire. Like finishing a course of antibiotics, maintaining intimacy requires continued effort, even after things improve. Your relationship deserves ongoing nurturing, like a plant needs regular watering. After trying various techniques, identify the three specific approaches that had the biggest positive impact on your relationship. With limited time available, focus on what gives you the biggest return on investment. Begin each morning by asking yourself, "What could I do to give my partner and our relationship my best today?" Consciously acknowledge your partner's presence with proper hellos and goodbyes. When they enter the room, look up, make eye contact, smile, and say hi with genuine excitement. Though it's easier to remain absorbed in your activities, these small moments of acknowledgement create multiple opportunities for connection throughout the day. Many couples fall into the trap of having the same superficial, "How was your day?" "Fine," exchanges, or worse, long stretches of silence. Ask better questions that spark thoughtful responses and reconnection. Questions like, "What initially attracted you to me?" "When do you feel closest to me?" Or, "What's something you love about me today?" can reignite that conversational spark. Creating relationship rituals, regular activities that feel special and unique to your partnership, can strengthen your bond immeasurably. These rituals make you feel like you're in a top secret club together. They might be as elaborate as taking an annual anniversary trip, or as simple as walking the dogs together daily. The key is transforming ordinary moments into meaningful connections. Regular State of Our Union relationship check-ins create space to express gratitude, celebrate accomplishments, and plan improvements. Whether daily, weekly, or monthly, ask questions like, "What did we do really well this week?" "When did you feel closest to me?" "What challenged us?" And "How can we be better partners to each other going forward?" Gratitude might sound cheesy, but research from the University of Georgia found it's the most consistent, significant predictor of marital quality. Simply noticing and thanking your partner for everyday actions, from taking out trash to making the bed, can light them up. Most importantly, explicitly acknowledge the new behaviors your partner is trying based on your sex talks. Positive reinforcement works far better than criticism. Beyond communication, vulnerability is the essential ingredient for intimacy. As Brené Brown says, there is no intimacy without vulnerability. Real intimacy isn't about having fairy tale perfection, it's about repeatedly choosing vulnerability. It's asking for power play when vanilla sex would be easier. It's initiating even after rejection. It's letting your partner see your tears instead of turning away. True intimacy comes from showing up authentically for yourself, your partner, and your love every single day.